Welcome to Tax Justice Warriors, the podcast that celebrates the work of low-income taxpayer clinics, focuses on tax controversy work, and looks at related issues in tax news. I'm your host, William Schmidt, the director of the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic at Kansas Legal Services.
Then on the second page, the E category is business information. E1 under business information is accounts receivable. Accounts receivable owed to that individual or their business, the name, address, and amounts owed by those accounts receivable. E2 is the name of the individual or the business on an account, listing credit cards, the issuing bank name and address, and the merchant account number. Generally, low-income clients don't have their own business that I've dealt with, but there is a possibility that they would. Next, we are moving into F, employment information. We are talking through the person's employer, the name and address, how often they are paid, looking at weekly, biweekly, semi-monthly, or monthly. If they're paid on the 15th and 30th, I would say semi-monthly. The IRS would like to know the gross per pay period. That is the amount before taxes. Then next, there is a space for taxes per pay period, listing the federal, state, and local taxes that would allow for figuring for the IRS or you to figure out what their net is, subtracting the taxes from the gross pay period. And then next, they ask how long they've been at their current employer. The next box, it goes through the same information for the spouse's employer, going through the name and address of their employer, how often they're paid, their gross amount per pay period, their taxes, and how long the spouse has been at the current employer. Category G goes through the monthly amounts of non-wage household income. The various categories are alimony, child support, net self-employment income after taxes, the net rental income, unemployment income, pension income, interest, dividend income, social security income, or other. Finally, category H turns to monthly necessary living expenses. Number one is food or personal care. And actually, to begin with, in category H, the monthly necessary living expenses, there are two columns under H. First, there is the actual monthly expenses. So this column is for filling out what the client actually pays per month on the various expenses. And the second column is what the IRS allows. Those categories, you would be using the local standard. You could fill those out. Those are the maximums that the IRS would allow the client to be paying in those categories, unless you have proof, some kind of documentation showing that they actually pay more per month than what the IRS allows. Again, I would say the out-of-pocket health care is the category that most likely the client is paying more per month than what the IRS allows, but there may be other categories that the client could prove they pay more, whether that would be food, car expenses, housing and utilities. It may depend, but certainly if your client says that they have higher expenses than what is allowed, then it is worth having the conversation with them if they can prove that by showing they pay more per month than what is allowed. Going through the category H expenses, first there is food and personal care. That is the food, housekeeping supplies, clothing and clothing services, personal care products and services, and miscellaneous. Most likely, you can go through with a client if they exceed those expenses, but generally the IRS has been generous in allowing what a person could pay per month for those food and personal care expenses. They often ask, are they exceeding those monthly expenses? And you can just say, no, we would like to claim those, and you can move down the line. The transportation expenses are number two. And there is the car expenses of gas, insurance, licenses, parking, maintenance, etc., or the public transportation costs. Category three is the housing and utilities. That is broken down first into rent, second, electric, oil or gas, water and trash. Third, telephone, cell phone, cable, or internet expenses. Fourth, real estate taxes and insurance, if that is not included in their monthly mortgage payment. And then fifth is maintenance and repairs to the house. You can total that up and see if that exceeds the county expenses for what is allowed by the IRS local standards. The fourth category of monthly expenses is medical, looking at health insurance and then out-of-pocket healthcare expenses. And the fifth category of expenses is other. So there it lists child or dependent care, estimated tax payments, term life insurance, retirement, whether that is employer required or voluntary, union dues, delinquent state and local taxes, their minimum payment of student loans, and then court-ordered payments, such as child support, alimony, or other court-ordered payments. Now, what you can do then is I recommend taking those numbers that your client has provided for you and totaling them up on the 433F or whichever 433 form you are using and figuring that out before providing that to the IRS. So what I do is I would be figuring out the expenses, looking at what the client has and not claiming over the amount, not going over what the IRS allows for the local standards unless we would have some documentation to prove that. Totaling that up and saying this is the expense figure and then going through. And also when you are totaling those expenses, do not forget to include the mortgage payment or the car payment that are listed in categories B and C on the first page of the 433F. Next, you would total up what the client's net pay is, totaling up their monthly household income and subtracting all of those expenses. If their monthly income is in excess of their expenses, then you should talk to the client about doing a payment plan, monthly payment plan, or also called an installment agreement. If their expenses are in excess of their income, then they would likely qualify for the currently not collectible category. At this point, you could have the client fill out the 433F, sign that, and you could send that on to the IRS by mail or fax. What I do is call into the practitioner priority line. The practitioner priority line is for tax practitioners. I recommend having the power of attorney on file or being prepared to fax that in to the IRS. When you call into the practitioner priority line, they will wait on the phone for you to do that. But that phone number is 1-866-860-4259. And I would select number 4 on the phone tree that goes to the individuals who are in the automated collection services. From there, I would give the information over the phone for the 433F to see if the individual qualifies for currently not collectible status. And if I have done the math beforehand to see if the client would qualify for currently not collectible status, then I generally have an educated guess as to their qualifications. I would call that in and they should qualify. Now, they might have to submit that for manager approval, but most likely that will go through and then you and the client should be receiving within the week a letter from the IRS detailing that they are in the currently not collectible status and what that entails. Now, I'm going to go through the pros and cons of currently not collectible status. The positives for currently not collectible status are that the IRS stops those collection actions. They are not going to try and garnish any wages, any Social Security, any bank accounts. They're not looking at filing a lien on a house or doing some other collection action like that. The account can stay in currently not collectible status as long as the individual's income stays at that level. So if they're on a fixed income, that individual can stay in the currently not collectible status for years. The IRS will check on an annual basis, and they will send out an annual reminder of what they owe. And eventually, the collection statutory expiration date can expire for what the amount owed would be. There is a 10-year period for that collection statutory expiration date. I will have to get in depth about the collection statutory expiration date at a later time, but eventually the 10-year period for that expiration date can expire and the individual can no longer owe for that tax year. Getting into the cons of the currently not collectible status. The currently not collectible status will place the debt on hold with the IRS, the individual will still owe that amount. It will generate interest over the years that will continue to accrue. The IRS will take each year's of refunds while that amount is owed, and they will offset those refunds to apply to their debt until it is paid off or it actually expires. The one other main con that I would mention is that the IRS will, I believe it is $10,000 or more if an individual owes, that the IRS may file a notice of federal tax lien. They will file that within the county in the public record that publicly notifies creditors that the IRS has a claim against property, including property acquired by the individual after the filing of the notice of federal tax lien. That notice may appear on the credit report and hurt the credit rating of an individual. And the IRS generally doesn't release the lien until the tax, penalty, interest, and recording fees are paid in full, or until the IRS may no longer legally collect that tax. I wanted to add a recent development. I have been working with the IRS. I've been trying to get clients into the currently not collectible category, and the IRS officers have been telling me that the client needs to be current on their tax filing. So that is a consideration to have, that it is worth checking to make sure that your client would be current on tax filing. I don't know if this is going to be IRS policy across the board, but it is something certainly to consider if you are trying to work with a client to get them into currently not collectible status or otherwise be dealing with collections. So for clients who are comfortable with the ramifications of the currently not collectible status, what that may entail, then that is fine to go ahead. It is worth telling the clients about the potential downsides for filing currently not collectible status, but I think it is often well worth it for clients that they are no longer getting contacted by the IRS, that they do not have fear of getting something garnished by the IRS, and potentially their refunds could pay off their debt and they could move on. So it may afford them some peace of mind that they would no longer have. I want to thank you for listening to this in-depth episode about currently not collectible status with the IRS. I hope it is very instructive for you and helps inform clients or other individuals. It is good that the IRS allows people to address their debt with the IRS, and even though they have financial hardship, they can take care of things in this fashion. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to Tax Justice Warriors. We have a Patreon page if you'd like to support this podcast. Providing monetary support for this podcast helps with expenses like equipment or travel to tax conferences. Supporting this podcast through Patreon comes with rewards, so check out our Patreon page. Please rate or review this podcast because positive reviews help get more people to know this podcast exists. The views expressed on this podcast are not official opinions of the IRS, the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic program, or the employers of the people who spoke on this program. Your tax situation is unique, so do not take the statements on this program as tax or legal advice. Consult with your own tax professional to provide you with specific advice on your situation. Tune in next time on Tax Justice Warriors for another interesting tax discussion.